This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor superfan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Venaria Jr. with Osperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Venaria Jr., Wealth Management Specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
All right, so the CR has passed. Now it's fate. Lies in the United States Senate. There are fears right now about the economy, but the good news is that the price of eggs is coming down. Welcome back to the show. It is our fourth and final hour here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD. Glad you're here on X at Rich Zeoli. This hour, we're also going to talk about government waste with an expert and college tuition, how we can actually bring it down and save money, which is a really, really great thing. We'll talk about that as well. But, you know, something about Josh Shapiro, the governor of Pennsylvania. I mean, there's a lot of things that bug me about this guy. One of the things that bugs me about this guy is that there was this huge cover-up in his administration regarding this aid and the sexual harassment thing, and these emails have disappeared. And it's just amazing to me how emails just disappear. So a couple of years ago, I think it was Holly Otterbein from Politico who broke the story about this. This guy who was this aide, top aide, I mean, not like, you know, just a person that works in the governor's office, but a top aide, accused of sexual harassment by a woman who worked in the governor's office. His name was Mike Vareb. He resigned in September of 2023. He was the director of legislative affairs. Big deal. He said one of his deputies had accused him of workplace sexual harassment in February and March of that year, very first weeks of the Shapiro administration. And the young female deputy felt so pressured, she left her position in the first week of March. This guy stayed on for another 6 months until September. Female Republican legislators, but few Democrats asked how this legislative aide, Mike Vareb, who'd also been a top aide in Shapiro's attorney general's office, had managed to stay in the post for months, despite the administration spending $300,000 in taxpayer dollars to settle the sexual harassment complaint. And now the question is, where are all these emails? See, Broad and Liberty had filed extensive right to know requests with the governor's office to try to get access to all of the communications regarding everything. But now they're saying the emails have disappeared. So just keep an eye on this story, because, again, with Shapiro looking to run for president of the United States in the year 2028, I don't want to let this story die. That's for damn sure. As Chuck Pascal put it at the time that the revelations came out in a statement Friday night, Manuel Bonder, a spokesman for the governor's office, said that Governor Shapiro was not aware of the complaint or investigation until months after the complaint was filed. Shapiro should have been notified of the allegation sooner, and he has now ordered that he be immediately informed of any such complaint against a senior staff or cabinet member. Governor Shapiro has no tolerance for harassment in the workplace or anywhere else. So that means that either the governor has no idea what's going on in his own inner circle, or they keep him in a good news bubble, or the statement is a blatant lie by the governor of Pennsylvania, and they really had no intention whatsoever of ever really getting to the bottom of all of this stuff. So there we go. I'm telling you right now, you know, Shapiro being a slime bag, he really is. I mean, it just stuff like this burns me, man. When our taxpayer dollars are used to cover this stuff up, Our taxpayer dollars are used to cover this stuff up. $300,000. $300,000. It's like this happens on Capitol Hill all the time, too, you know? Capitol Hill, this happens. They have these sexual harassment suits. You know, Al Green, one of them. Al Green had allegations of sexual harassment by a legislative aide. That money got paid out to her, covered up, and then it all gets covered. It's gone. We don't get the truth. Oh, Rosie O'Donnell has moved to Ireland? She's really, is that real? She's gone? Wow.
That's real. Breaking news.
Do you have the TikTok video? Can you pull that up? Oh, it's a 9-minute video. Never mind. I'd rather
finding it now.
Yeah, I'd rather kill myself with a can of Guinness than listen to that. So she literally left the United States because of Donald Trump. Finally, wow.
Well, she hates Donald Trump. I'm shocked she actually did it this time because I remember she threatened to leave in 2016 and then ultimately went nowhere.
Yeah, they never really do. That's the thing. They always say they're going to leave, but they never do. So in this case, that actually happened, huh? Wow.
I have the video. It's 9 minutes, though. I don't know if she curses in it. It's up to you if you want to hear some of it.
I kind of do, only because this is a big win for the people. Is it not? I mean, this is a big win for the little guy to get rid of that. To get rid of Rosie. Well,
Justin, just keep your finger on the dump button because I haven't screened this at all, and I don't have any idea what she says.
All right, of all the breaking news today in all the land, including the peace deal with Ukraine and Russia, the continuing resolution passing today, the other breaking news around the President Trump buying a Tesla, this is really the big news you need to know. Brought to you by our buddy Dr. Mike Veneria, VeneriaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile because you're going to be smiling about this. Rosie O'Donnell leaving the United States of America, that's going to make you grin. So make sure you have a great smile to be able to show it off with. All right, let's listen to Rosie O'Donnell fleeing America.
Well, hey, everybody. It's me, Rosie O'Donnell, star of the Flintstones. It's Tuesday all day, as my Nana would say. And I'm here in Ireland. And it's beautiful and warm, not physically. It's actually quite cold. Moved here on January 15th. And it's been pretty wonderful, I have to say. The people are so loving and so kind, so welcoming. And
let them get to know you. Yeah. Give them time to get to know you.
In the process of getting my Irish citizenship, as I have Irish grandparents. And that's what's going on. And that's where I've been and what I've been doing. And although I was never someone who thought I would move to another country. That's what I decided would be the best for myself and my 12-year-old child. And here
we are. Not your 12-year-old caretaker?
So TikTok has gotten a little bit dark and negative for me. I don't feel capable of going through the hate.
This is so boring. I want a leprechaun to kill me. This is boring. Oh, God. Well, good riddance to Rosie. She sounds so low energy, doesn't she?
She's at peace now. She's in Ireland.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, good for her. Rosie, good luck. Let's hope we never have to hear from you again. What's that?
I was going to say, she actually isn't as angry as she typically is in these types of videos. Usually she's screaming and throwing around four-letter words. She seems at peace. Ireland, Rosie, not that bad. You know what? I think this will work out for her.
We like Ireland, Rosie O'Donnell, don't we? Luck of the Irish. Good luck to you, Rosie. Good luck to you, lad. Or lattice. Price of eggs have gone down. Caroline Levitt announcing that today. The price of eggs have gone down. That's a big deal. Makes me very, very happy. Some good news because we've heard a lot of dark news about things. But Caroline Levitt announced that today from the White House. The price of eggs has gone down. I think I think we have a clip of this, right, Matt? I think I sent it to you. Did I?
I don't have her talking about it.
I know she said that today.
Okay.
That's all right. That's all right. She also talked about a couple of other things today from the White House press podium. One of them was shutting down the fake news comments about Elon Musk and Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. The media is scaring people about this. Cuts to Medicaid, Medicare, and Social Security. We're going to talk to an expert in government waste coming up next. But here's the press secretary from earlier today at the White House press briefing, cut number 5.
I want to ask you about some comments Elon Musk made yesterday. He said that there is $500 to $700 billion in waste and fraud and entitlement spending. He called it, quote, the big one to eliminate. Earlier this month, he also referred to Social Security as a Ponzi scheme. Should Americans expect changes, big changes, to Social Security and Medicare?
President Trump has been unequivocally clear on this. He is going to protect Social Security and Medicare benefits and Medicaid for hardworking Americans who paid into these entitlement programs and deserve those hard-earned benefits. And unfortunately, the mainstream media has taken Mr. Musk out of context. I saw a Bloomberg headline that our team actually worked on getting updated and fixed because it was so wrong, and it took Mr. Musk out of context. What he was specifically referring to cutting was the waste and the fraud and abuse that does exist in these programs. According to an IG report from the Social Security Administration, there's more than $70 billion of fraud in the Social Security program alone that we know of. And so the president will continue to protect these programs for hardworking Americans. And actually cutting the waste, fraud, and abuse out of these programs will protect it for hardworking Americans.
Yeah, good. I mean, waste, fraud, and abuse, there's a lot of that out there. There's a lot of it, as you know, and we got to get to the bottom of it, no doubt. Oh, you know, I meant to bring this up with Susan Crabtree earlier today, but I didn't. We just ran out of time. But great interview with Susan Crabtree. If you missed it, definitely listen to the podcast. The producer of The Simpsons is a guy named Rick Pelizzi, and they had a Simpsons-inspired treehouse, 24-year-old Simpsons-inspired treehouse in the city of Los Angeles, and now he's been forced to demolish it. So you want to know what ridiculous government looks like? You want to know what nonsense looks like? It looks like this. It sounds like this. So here's a Simpsons producer explaining what he had to do here. This is a report from KTLA5, cut 17.
I'm Rick Pelizzi. We are out here today because the treehouse that I built with a carpenter friend 24 years ago is coming down. The city has started a criminal trial on it, and that trial is on Wednesday. And the city is going to make me pay for court costs, and it's just kind of being a bully. And so I'm taking it down. We're paying for it to get taken down so they dismiss the charges. I do not want to go to court on Wednesday, so that's why this is all coming down.
Unbelievable. That's stupid, stupid governance in the city of California. Really stupid. Oh, there's an article in the New York Post today. I meant to. It's an op-ed, it's an opinion piece. RFK Jr. needs to get to the truth about Andrew Cuomo's deadly COVID nursing home order. It's an editorial by the Post board. And I totally agree with this because the LoveGov is out there, you know, running on leadership. My leadership is what New York needs. He is the nursing home killer. And he's the guy that got away with it. But as the Secretary of Health and Human Services, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. can give us all the details on all of this. It falls on Robert F. Kennedy Jr., Cuomo's former brother-in-law, ironically, to spell whether the March 25th, 2020 directive by the governor defied the federal policy that the ex-governor insists he was following, putting all these COVID-positive patients in nursing homes. So Cuomo is running on experience and leadership to try to do his political comeback so that he can run for president in 2028. And Bobby Kennedy can give us all the answers that we need. Oh, you know, Kennedy stopped by a Steak and Shake to try fries and beef tallow. If you're ever up, and I've asked this, I've asked you to let me know if you know of any local places that are using beef tallow to fry their fries, let me know. There's a place up in Sparta, New Jersey, in North Jersey, my buddy Josh Hertzberg. It's called Burger and Butcher. and they use beef tallow. They're all about making America healthy again for their burgers and their fries. But on the local level, let me know if you have a place that uses beef tallow, because I will go and support them. I know that Angelo's, the pizza place in South Philly, they do. They use beef tallow. RFK Jr. ate Steak and Shake on live TV because they're frying everything in beef tallow, which is better for you than seed oils. We were used to use beef tallow, and then everybody got afraid of fat, and so we transitioned to seed oils, but they're really bad for you. But here's what happened with this. Cut 14.
Beef tallow.
Oh, by the way, here you go.
Here's just take the red mask, and I'll take those trays back for you.
Okay? Oh, okay. Is that...
this is you, Sean.
Oh, this is me? Okay, thank you.
And Secretary, this is for you.
Enjoy. Thank you. You didn't pick up my Coke, did you?
Get your Coke?
Miss Small, with the little ice. But I'm not going to drink it all because he's going to yell at me.
Is that him and Hannity? That's him and Hannity. Hannity drinks Coke.
Steak and Shake just switched out. Mm. And people are raving about these French fries. You taste them.
They're amazing. They really are. I'm not. This is not.
When I was a kid, I traveled in Europe. The Europe is great, always had great food. The French fries were always a disappointment because we had the best French fries here. They had Pomfrites over there, and they just didn't taste right. Today, the best French fries in the world are in Europe. I order them every time I go to Belgium or France or any place else. And the French fries here just don't taste right. And you taste these, it's a completely different experience, and the customers are raving about it. Other companies, Steak and Shake, has been great. We're very grateful for them, for RFK and the French fries. They turned me into a verb. But also Popeyes.
By the way, a plastic straw. Thank you. Thank God. I can't stand those paper straws. I hate them.
Yeah, the movement to low-fat vegetable oil because everybody was afraid of fat. Such a stupid, stupid trend that this country went down in the 1990s, 80s and 90s, getting away from fat and healthy vegetable oil. No, it was not, there was nothing healthy about it, just like low carb, not healthy either. And also, too, I wanted to mention, you know what? I'm running out of time here, but I got to, because we have a guest coming up in just a couple of minutes. But here's what I'll do. We'll continue the show. I'm keeping an eye on everything for you. I thought maybe we would have a statement or two regarding the CR. But that's the breaking news this hour anyway, is that the continuing resolution did pass. Yeah, don't forget my Coke. I know. So it's so annoying. All right. Listen, spring is here. It's beautiful out. It really is. Today was a gorgeous day. Time for you to start thinking about your lawn, okay, and how that lawn is going to be the envy of the neighborhood if you use my lawn care company, Natural Lawn of America, because you're going to get greener grass with fewer weeds, guaranteed. That's right. And it's going to be safer for your kids, safer for your pets, and you're going to love it. And their program is fantastic. From organic fertilizers to safer weed and insect controls, they make sure your lawn thrives naturally season after season. Don't take my word for it, even though I've been using them for years. Join the growing number of homeowners switching to Natural Lawn's safer services and start enjoying a beautiful, eco-friendly lawn you can be proud of. Schedule Natural Lawn's full service program today and get free seeding every year. Every year. And I'm telling you right now, that free seeding makes such a difference in the health of your lawn. It really does. And why the grass is so green. All you got to do is sign up today by calling 1-800-FREE-SEED. 1-800-FREE-SEED. Your lawn deserves the best. And a Natural Lawn, they believe in growing greener, healthier lawns without the harsh chemicals. Their environmentally friendly products keep your lawn lush and green while protecting the safety of your family and pets. So choose a local company that actually treats your lawn the way it deserves to be treated and gives your lawn the love and attention that it deserves as well. 1-800-FREE-SEED, Natural Lawn of America, greener grass, fewer weeds, guaranteed.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
All right, let's talk about some waste, baby. We hate waste. We don't mind spending money in this house, but we just hate wasting it. I'm sure you feel the same way about your country, although I don't want to spend any more money or wasting it. So let's talk about it. How much does this all really cost us? And for that, let's go to the expert, Jeremy Portnoy, investigative journalist and author of Open the Books, Waste of the Day column on Real Clear. He's at Jeremy Portnoy, and we're happy to have him right now on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD. Jeremy, thanks for making the time for us today. We talk about waste. We hear that word a lot, the W word. I guess the first thing I'd say is to the people who get the money, it probably doesn't feel like waste to them. They're probably loving this.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of money to go around, unfortunately, in the government. You're seeing that everywhere. What we've been doing is actually tracking spending at every federal agency listed in the Federal Register, trying to see how that's increased over time. So we started back in 2000, traced it to 2025, and we're seeing almost every agency, unsurprisingly, just soaring in spending up to 500%, 1,000% in some instances, almost all across the board.
You know what really drives me crazy from your report from Open the Books is EPA spending. Up 569%. Let's just round up and say 570%. That's insane to me. The EPA is the single most annoying federal agency because you know that that spending went towards busting the chops of small businesses and private landowners, too.
It's crazy, and not everyone realizes those numbers because the employee headcount has actually gone down since 2000. So that's the argument a lot of people use to say, oh, the government isn't getting much bigger. We don't need to cut this waste. But then when you track the spending, like you said, it's up 570%. Most of that increase came under Biden, and a lot of it's going to these nonprofits that are now exerting a lot of influence over government and in some cases affecting congressional law through, you know, sue and settle arrangements and other deals where they really get a lot of control over how things are doled out.
Yeah, the sue and settle arrangements are ridiculous. And just give us a little background into that for people that don't know.
Yeah, so that's an arrangement where an outside group sues the government. The case is settled outside of court with the executive branch, meaning now the executive and this nonprofit get to decide how a congressional law should be interpreted without an actual court ever being involved. So that ends up rewriting a lot of policies signed by Congress, gives the president not unchecked power over it, but a lot more influence than you would expect.
Yeah, and this is a problem that we've been talking about for years. I mean, the runaway power of the executive branch of government, the runaway power of bureaucrats within these various departments. So let's go through some of this. In mapping the growth of government, an ongoing investigation into government spending and staffing trends by Open the Books. Jeremy Portnoy is with me right now. The Department of Energy, workforce grew modestly, 6.7%, although I would say for many private companies, if they saw 6.7% growth, they'd say that's probably explosive growth, right? So that's the difference right there. Yet spending surged 390%, let's just call it that, with the sharpest spike in the last 4 years. Now, I would say that's a good thing if that means that we're drilling more and we're fracking more and we're getting more oil and natural gas. But I'm going to guess that since it happened in the last administration, probably a lot of that money went towards stopping those things from occurring.
Right. It's always split. We've been tracking the spending for a long time. And of course, you've got important initiatives mixed in there, but you're always going to have this crazy waste. So one of the big things we found, we were tracking federal buildings and their headquarters. The Department of Energy was one of the big ones we found. Their headquarters is 2 million square feet large. On an average day, there were only 4 people inside the building, and they were still paying all this money to lease out this space. It was basically just a ghost town in there. That's money just thrown out the door that contributes to this huge surge in spending over time.
Oh, it's really frustrating. All right, FCC. Now, I got to be careful because we're governed by the FCC, so I can't drop any of the 7 deadly words. But staff numbers declined there 21.6%, which I would say that's great. Fantastic. Good. But annual spending skyrocketed by 1,194.6%. So 1,194.6%, with the most dramatic increases occurring post 2020. So Biden gets in there. All these agencies really blew up during Biden's administration. Why does the FCC need to spend so much freaking money?
That was one of the biggest surges we've seen. We were about halfway through the Federal Register now. That's one of the top increases that we were able to find. And it's just another example of these smaller agencies, right, that don't always come to mind right away. Right? We always think of the EPA, the Department of Energy. Those are those big ones with big public confirmation hearings. The FCC is a smaller one that might just slip by the wayside. But it's important to remember there's 375 active agencies and sub-agencies in the Federal Register. Every single one of them pretty much has been increasing their spending. spending, and that's how we get to a huge national debt, a huge spending deficit.
So, all right, so this is the problem, though. I mean, I said freaking, by the way, for a reason, because I didn't say the F word. But we have this massive growth of media that is not under the FCC's control now. And yet the FCC is ballooning in terms of what it's doing. And that's insane, because one could probably argue in this day and age, you don't even really need an FCC anymore, because so many people get their news information from the internet, which the FCC has no control over, cable news outlets, which the FCC has no control over, satellite radio, which the FCC has no control over, the stream on YouTube where our show airs, so the FCC has no control over. So you could probably shut it down and deal with it, and we'd all survive as a country if somebody dropped the actual F-bomb on a radio show or a TV show over the airwaves. Like, we would deal with that, or the marketplace would deal with that. But it just seems to be the pattern of more regulators, more bureaucracy, more justifying their existence. And I think, Jeremy, that's one of the things that I've learned really at OpenTheBooks.com and a lot of your writing in the past has been that for so many of these bureaucrats, it's almost as if they have to keep spending more money to justify their existence. Would you say that that's fair?
Yeah, that's absolutely fair. I mean, I'm not going to be the one to drop the F-bomb on air, but we're always in favor of more deregulation in government,
yeah,
right? Because like you said, if this is an agency that isn't serving a very specific purpose that's directly benefiting the American people, it's still spending taxpayer dollars, taking money out of people's wallets. And you're seeing that change now, you know, with Trump changing the White House press pool, talking about defunding PBS and NPR.
Good.
Obviously, different people are going to feel different ways about that, but it's just an example of where there's money that can be reallocated, given back to taxpayers. And there's so many thousands of examples of that all across the board.
Let me tell you, nobody's going to shed a tear for PBS or NPR, except for liberals who have sleep problems and can't fall asleep, because that's really the only purpose that NPR serves at this point. It's so freaking boring. All right, let's talk about the State Department. Despite a 26.6% reduction in staff, spending there surged 557.7% compared to 2000 levels. Now, of course, obviously, a lot of this, I'm guessing, is tied to USAID. I'm guessing grants and expenditures. And I think there's some confusion about what state, what's USAID, what state manages from USAID. You point out that Secretary Marco Rubio has since announced efforts to cut $60 billion in future spending. But my question is, why was all this money spent in the last 4 years in the first place?
Yeah, it's just another one, spending soaring, right? We're seeing money going out the door, a lot of poverty assistance to countries around the world, where we found examples of them not spending their own money responsibly, right? We sent $1 billion last year to the Democratic Republic of the Congo to help out with poverty there. Obviously, hopefully that had some good impacts, but the own country, their own government, just went to Switzerland, dropped $500,000 on a luxury hotel stay for their bureaucrats there.
Right.
So it's just a perfect example, right, where we're doling out assistance, even though these countries aren't helping themselves.
Really, they're taking our money and they're using it for luxury hotel stays. I don't get to stay at luxury hotels. That's not fair. They're taking my money and using it to stay at a luxury hotel. That really bothers me.
Right. I mean, I'd love to do it, too. I mean, they're using their own funds to do that. But still, at the same time, they're accepting $1 billion in American funding.
Yeah.
Because they're saying we don't have enough money to help our own people. But this is where they're spending their money.
Well, all I hope is that they had good chocolates on the pillows and transgender comic books, because otherwise that would have been just a giant waste of a trip, if you ask me. Let's talk about also now Doge and where we are with all that and when we can really start to feel the extent of what they want to do in terms of cutting government and cutting the size of government, which, of course, obviously, there's all these court battles that are playing out. Because I think as everybody's listening to this right now, Jeremy, they're thinking the exact same thing that I'm thinking. How does this affect me? If they just cut all this money and all of this, aren't they going to just shift it to different places? Will I ever feel it? Will my family ever feel it? Will my kids feel it? Give me the answer to that.
It's not going to be an easy overnight battle, right? The deadline that Doge set, at least when they started, was they were going to operate until July 2026. In reality, it's unlikely we'll have a fully balanced federal budget at that point, because the problem has just gotten so large that it's unfortunately going to take years to undo. But over time, if you really start cutting the spending, if you start cutting earmarks, which cost tens of billions every single year, if you start cutting weights at the Pentagon, which spends tens of millions every year on, you know, lobster tail and just these crazy contracts, that's when you really start feeling the effects. That's when we can significantly lower taxes without taking away the core services that people truly rely on.
By the way, just as an aside, you ever tried deep fried lobster tails?
I have not. That sounds like defeating the purpose. No?
You would think, and yet they are amazing. They really are. Had them for the first night the other night. Unbelievable. I thought this. I went into it very skeptical, and I left a fan. That's all I'm going to say. But they should. But at the same time, I paid for it with my private dollars. It should not be paid for by public dollars, whether it's fried or it's broiled or it's sauteed or whatever the hell it is. You know. All right. So then we think about the size of the federal government, and then you also have point this out. OpenTheBooks.com and OpenTheBooks.substack.com. Evidence that federal record keeping is a gigantic mess. That's the other problem that I have here is I'm glad that Elon Musk has the brain power to be able to figure all this out. But probably they've been able to get away with all this for so long is because how do we even begin to track this? It's like tracking how many laws and federal rules are on the books. It's almost virtually impossible.
Right. That was the very start of our investigation. I mentioned before we're looking into 375 active agencies and sub-agencies. I said active because there's another 75 still listed in the register that actually don't exist anymore. But when you take a look at this list, a lot of them aren't noted as such. So if you're just an average person sitting on your couch, you want an idea of how big your government is, how many agencies there are, there's really no easy way for you to figure it out. If you go to this resource, they're not keeping the records up to date. It's very hard to tell which agencies are still spending money and which have been defunct for years.
Well, that's why it's good that Open the Books is there. And the waste of the day, your piece at Real Clear Politics investigates. I think that's important because we're talking about it now, which is a good thing. And hopefully this doesn't become just something that we go back and look on and say, we had such a great opportunity here. We really could have done something. Follow Jeremy at Jeremy Portnoy. I appreciate this. We'll share a link to your research and come back and see us again here in Philadelphia. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Rich.
You bet, Jeremy.
The Rich Scioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Let's talk about college funding, shall we? Let's talk about bringing education back to the States. Let's talk about parents having more control over their kids' education process. Let's talk about all of it today. But joining me today, my guest, is the president of Cornerstone University, Gerson Moreno-Riano. And Mr. President, thanks for joining us here today in Philadelphia. We appreciate it.
Rich, thank you so much for the opportunity. Look forward to our conversation.
You know, I'm a big fan of Linda McMahon. I love the idea that somebody got hired to put herself out of a job. I think that's pretty cool.
It's really an incredible opportunity she has. I mean, the president has teed her up, quite frankly, and basically laid out the outcome he wants. And here's why we need to do it and why. And now she's got her marching orders. And I think her background suits her well for the job she has to do. It's a complicated task, obviously. It's a massive bureaucracy with a long history. So she's got her work cut out for her. But I think she'll be able to do it. And I'm sure she's hard at work right now.
When you think about it, and I mean, obviously, as a college president, you're talking to parents a lot. You're meeting with them. What are some of the biggest issues that are on their minds today? My kids are younger, 10, 8, and 5. So we're thinking about saving for college. But you're talking to parents and their kids are in high school. And what do they tell you?
I tell you, number one, it's funding. Mm-hmm. It's finances. I mean, that is the number one thing of parents, adult learners across the board. It's how am I going to pay for this? And then number two, is it worth the price? So you have this tension between the price tag. I think it was last year, Vanderbilt was the first university in the country to go beyond $100,000 a year for tuition. I mean, that's a massive price tag, right? Mm-hmm. And then you have the whole value piece. Is this really worth it? Do I really even need this? And that, the latter, has become a significant conversation point now over the last couple of years in our country. When we speak to parents or adult learners, that's what's on their mind. Look, I have to get loans or grants. I have to save. I've got to do all these things to make this work. But will the outcome be really what I think it could be or should be?
Yeah.
And what's the value piece? And that should force us at universities to really think deeply about our value proposition, about effectiveness, about being good stewards and delivering value for every family out there.
Now, on that end, I understand that Cornerstone University is doing something to help parents save money, which is a really, really cool idea. A new program called SOAR. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we just launched SOAR today, actually. And what we've done is that we took a hard look at price, value, and technology. And we're like, how can we bring these three things together in accessibility? How do we do this? So we created this program that really cuts the tuition of, you know, out of, and really it cuts it significantly so that we were more competitive than any other university in the country. Mm-hmm. We've also created the first ever accredited bachelor's degree that can be delivered via an app on a phone.
Wow.
Which is a significant play for us to increase accessibility and flexibility. And we've brought world-class faculty and curricula to deliver an experience that's unlike anything else, because I'm convinced that today's students, whether they're 18 or 35 or 40, you know, the way they consume information has been shaped by Amazon Prime, by Netflix, mm-hmm. right, by Hulu. And so we've really redid our entire curriculum to fit within that model of delivering content. So it's engaging, and we can re-enchant what I call the disenchanted learner. So we're looking forward to that. But the last couple of years as well, I will tell you, we did a tuition reset here at Cornerstone, of a 22% tuition reset. I looked at our team and I said, look, you know, we have families here who are really trying to make ends meet, want to see their kids go through college, yeah. give them the best, you know, opportunity possible. Let's do the hard work ourselves to take a hard look at value, what we offer, and ensure that it is worth the price tag. And we've begun to see some significant yield from that. And parents telling us, thank you, that you're doing that. You're thinking about this. And you're thinking about me and my family as humans, right? Mm-hmm. Not just transactions. And so I think we'll see great yield from that in the years to come.
I understand you met with about 40 different CEOs talking about the program. What was their reaction to it?
Yeah, we met this morning with about 45 CEOs of West Michigan. I mean, nothing but lots of great positive questions, right? You know, can our employees, you know, get credit for prior learning or prior college experience? How does the mentoring work? How does the coursework work? So we showcased the app and how it was done via a phone, and it was overwhelmingly positive. We had three CEOs. We partnered with 12 businesses last year to launch this, to test it. They were there. Some of them, and they spoke and endorsed what we're doing, endorsed the program, endorsed what they're seeing their employees learn and bring to the job right at the job. And, you know, these companies reflect some of the top companies in West Michigan, in manufacturing, food service, construction, technology, on and on. So we're very, very pleased at their reception. We've got a lot of good hard work to do, but we believe that what higher education needs in America right now is significant disruption and significant value for the dollar.
Yeah. I couldn't agree with you more. Let me just make sure I say it correctly here. Gerson Moreno Riano received his, he's the president, the 12th president of Cornerstone University, which is a Christian university in Michigan. It's great to have him on the show today. Really excited to talk about this new program that they have. You're also a scholar and an intellectual. I'm not even going to try to pronounce this because I'll completely botch it, but it's right here in our backyard in Princeton University. It is, you're a fellow in the, why don't you just tell us what it is?
Yeah, for several years, the Lehrman American Studies Center held a fellowship center at Princeton for every summer for 2 weeks. And I was able to attend. I was invited by the Lehrman American Studies Center to go to Princeton. They had two weeks of the year. And we studied American principles, ideas, and the Constitution. And I just learned the power of not just ideas, but ensure that we make ideas relevant to everyday people. That to me was the most important thing we need to be doing.
Yeah, and I think that it's really important too. And one of the points about that, and I appreciate the fact that you are a philosopher, and because I think it's lost today in a generation to really critically think about things. Mm. And I worry in kind of this ADD environment that we're in, where everything is, you know, a minute or 90 seconds or so, that people won't dive in deep and think about these things. But the other thing I worry about is that the idea of debating different ideas, particularly on college campuses, is going away. And I know that you believe very much in free speech, and you believe in the idea of the discourse of ideas. But what is the state of American politics, for lack of a better word, on college campuses right now?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, you've seen it in the last 2 years play out, even been since COVID playing out. What was shocking to me in over the last 2 years was the inability of leaders in our country, college leaders in our country, to call out evil and say it's evil.
Yeah.
Let's just start there. That was a shock to me, because one of the very important parts of higher education, American higher education, is it's been premised and founded on truth and on beauty and on goodness. Without that, you have no education. Uh-huh. If you can't speak about truth, what's true, what's beautiful, and what's good, and educate individuals toward that, then you don't have education. You don't have universities. And that, to me, was the biggest shock over the last couple of years, the inability or the unwillingness, maybe, of leaders to call certain things out. So freedom is absolutely, absolutely non-negotiable, the most important foundation to have significant, vigorous discussions about truth, beauty, and goodness. If you take freedom away, then you take away that possibility. And I think not only do you shortchange your society, you hurt your society in the future, because you have to have the ability to have these discussions and rationally, thoughtfully, intellectually, respectfully, but you have to do that. So my sense now is that even in American higher ed, you know, there's a shift happening. I think people are realizing the importance of it. They're realizing what's going to happen if they don't. They're realizing that the new administration is really pushing for this, and it's important. But I think for many years, it's been untouched.
Yeah.
For many years, you know, you can go to institutions. I mean, there were several years ago, there were actual movements to destroy universities, and universities themselves hosted those conversations. Right. And so it's been a shocking, what I call sort of revolutionary lab of ideas across many universities that have been hurting. And I think now we're beginning to see a shift that I think should be welcomed and should cause universities to embrace and have real open conversation and dialogue, because that's what education is supposed to be.
Krishan, last question for you. I mean, as president of Cornerstone University, and you just did this tuition reset, lowering tuition by 22%, which is amazing. I mean, that's I'm hearing that and I'm going, wow, but the situation of how our tuition got so out of control, I blame the government for a lot of that, in the sense that no matter what colleges did, they would guarantee a loan to go for that kid. So there was no incentive for universities to cut costs, to look into things. So they kept, you know, raising salaries and expanding, knowing that no matter what they charged, there would always be a student in that seat backed by a government loan. And then, of course, all these college students graduated with all this debt. And then you had the previous administration come along and just say, well, we'll cancel the debt. The Supreme Court says, no, you can't. He does it anyway. And it just becomes a secular problem here with no end in sight, as I think about what college is going to cost when my five-year-old is ready to go to college. So what do we do in the long term? As a guy who's really working hard to bring down the cost of tuition for the students at Cornerstone, what do we do in the long term to fix this problem?
I think universities have to be forced to innovate and grow on their own. Otherwise, I think what's happened with the government, it's created dependency on the government. And that dependency and no accountability means that there's no incentive to innovate, to grow, to be good stewards, to be effective necessarily. And if that's not there and the money keeps flowing, then you get what you get, which is what we are right now. So you have to innovate and grow. Otherwise, if you don't, I think you should be looking at consolidating and closing. Quite frankly, I think that's what many schools are looking at right now. I think in the state of Pennsylvania, I just read last week, there's a in the Penn State system, 14 campuses, I think, or 16, and they're considering perhaps downsizing 12 of them. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a very real situation across the country.
Yeah, well, I think your SOAR app, your mobile app, is going to help in that. And that's not a bad thing either, by the way. It's not a bad thing to think about, because I see far too much waste on beautiful campus buildings that are built that really serve no educational purpose, but it does lead to higher tuition rates, no doubt about that.
Yeah, you have to innovate, and you have to, you know, look, it's a competitive market, number one. You have companies like Google, like Amazon, like IBM, doing a lot of in-house training and education themselves. They're realizing that the graduates they're receiving from our colleges are not ready for the market. So there's something wrong.
That's crazy.
Universities have to pay attention to that. We have to innovate. We have to force effectiveness, and it should be a welcomed thing, effectiveness of what we're doing, and measuring and ensuring that the people we graduate are three steps ahead out there for the market, and that they actually are a blessing to our communities, our organizations, our institutions, our businesses. And I think that's what we have to do. I think the transition of a DOE bureaucracy to something that's much more lean and perhaps not doesn't exist will force institutions to do that. And I think those that do it proactively will be farther ahead than those that don't.
Yeah, well said. Great conversation. Gerson Moreno-Riano, president of Cornerstone University. Thank you, my friend. Hope to have you back on the show again.
Thanks so much for the opportunity. Take care. Thank you.
God bless.
The Rich Scioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.